her around, he was finally giving her the privilege of doing the same to somebody else. It occurred to Mira to be kind to the new girl, to share with her rather than intimidate her. Mira had always wanted a daughter instead of the two noisy sons who trailed dirt all over her freshly vacuumed carpet and wrestled like baboons over everything. But at the wedding, jealousy overtook Mira. Rita was young and vibrant. The cropped blouse of her wedding lehenga showed off the tight, honey-smooth skin of her midriff. In Mira's day, such outfits were considered scandalous. Mira felt a twinge of jealousy, observing the way Rita's husband watched her during the wedding reception. His eyes roamed over her body, hungrily taking her in. "Wait till they've been married a few years," Mira told herself. "His wonderment will wear off." These thoughts were satisfying, yet Mira was aware that her husband had never looked at her like that, even in the early days. After the newlyweds returned from their honeymoon, Mira gave Rita a tour of the house, making sure to point out where everything was, from the spare sofa covers to the winter jackets. Rita appeared to be paying attention, but that night, after washing the dishes, she stacked the plates haphazardly and wedged the cutlery into every available space. Fuming, Mira plucked all of the dishes from the drainer and started over. It took her some time to finish the chores for the evening because Rita ignored her system of wiping down the tables and thoroughly sweeping beneath the counters to get rid of stray rice grains. When she finally finished, Mira was so glad that it wasn't a Tuesday or a Friday. She was too tired and irate to put up with her husband's routine thrusts. As she settled into bed, her husband already snoring soundly, Mira heard noises from the adjacent room, a giggle followed by a shh, then the unmistakable laughter of her brother-in-law. Mira pressed her ear against the wall. Rita's voice was commanding. "Good," she was saying. "Keep going. Do it harder." Mira recoiled from the wall. No wonder Rita didn't take instructions from her. She was too busy being the boss in her marriage. "This won't do," Mira thought. There could only be one ruler of this household, and it was going to be her. She decided to be extra stern with Rita the next day. She would insist on taking Rita through another tour of the house, and she would quiz her afterwards. "Where does the Windex go? What about the spare plastic bags from the grocery store?" Through the walls, she could hear Rita's moans escalating now, and the bed creaking to a frantic rhythm. Didn't the girl realize that there were other people living in this house? Mira purposely opened her room door and shut it loudly to remind the newlyweds of the way sound traveled in this home. The noise ceased for a few moments, but eventually it resumed, with Rita's moans swelling through the house like notes in an opera song. Mira burned with envy. She tiptoed out of the room and noticed with disappointment that Rita's bedroom door was shut. If it was just slightly ajar, she would be able to see what was going on. For some reason, she could not picture it. All she could see when she shut her eyes was Rita's smooth, flat tummy. Her mind's eye roved higher, and she could picture the girl's firm, round breasts, her nipples flushed pink and alert. She pictured a pair of lips closing around those nipples, and she was horrified to realize that those lips belonged to her. She chased the image out of her mind and blamed her tiredness for making her imagination run wild. Mira sprang out of bed the next morning, ready to start and finish her chores. She passed Rita's room and noticed that the door was still shut. While Mira made tea, the sound of giggling drifted into the kitchen. Mira's sons tipped their heads up towards the ceiling and then they exchanged curious glances. "Finish your breakfast," Mira ordered. Above her, Rita could be heard making demands again. "Use your tongue," she was saying. "Yes, just like that." Mira reddened. Again, she felt a strong tingling, a sensation that she was experiencing what Rita was asking for. Rita finally came downstairs after her husband had left for work and the boys for school. The house was still. Mira threw herself into her chores. "Can I help with anything?" Rita asked. Mira coldly replied that she didn't need any help. "All right," Rita said with a shrug. Mira could feel the younger woman watching her. She felt self-conscious. "You must think I'm very uptight," Mira said finally. "I didn't say that, but you're thinking it. Are you?" "No," Mira said. She picked up the laundry basket and marched to the washing machine. "I'm practical. I'm considerate of others. I'm not interested in hearing your nighttime activities." "We'll keep it down next time." Rita's casualness infuriated Mira further. She searched the house for an impossible task for Rita to complete, perhaps washing the windows. The water spots always dried and left milky circles on the glass, making it look unclean. She was about to give her orders to Rita when she noticed that the laundry detergent was missing. "Where is it?" she demanded. "Didn't I tell you to keep the detergent on the shelf?" Rita calmly pointed out that the detergent was better placed in the storage cupboard with the other cleaning supplies. "Rubbish," said Mira. "Is this how you expect to run a home?" She marched over to the storage cupboard and found the laundry detergent. In the cupboard, her hand also brushed across a box that she had not seen before. She reached into the box and found it full of clay sticks. They were rounded at the ends with a particular length and thickness to resemble a certain part of a man's body. She was about to return to Rita to confront her when she felt a breath on the back of her neck. "I didn't think anyone would find those," Rita whispered. "I didn't think you would need these," Mira replied, turning around. Her throat was dry, but she managed to get the words out. It was rumored that older women molded these sticks out of clay and baked them to keep aside for when they were feeling an urge that their husbands could no longer satisfy. "You're too young," Mira said. Rita's laughter was like birdsong. "Too young? Oh, Mira, there's so much I can teach you." "You teach me," Mira retorted. "I'm your elder." But as she spoke, Rita had leaned forward and kissed her on the neck. Lightly, with her tongue, she traced Mira's collarbone. Mira gasped and shrank back into the cupboard as Rita brushed her lips against Mira's cheek and then finally a full, deep kiss on the mouth. "I can show you lots of things," said Rita. Here, Tanvir stopped. The colour in her cheeks was high. She pressed her lips together and waited. The room was so silent that Nikki could hear the air stirring through the heating vents. "What happens next?" Nikki said.
"They help each other out," Tanvir said.
She couldn't seem to meet the stares of the other women. Nikki nodded encouragingly at her.
"I haven't imagined that part yet." "It's definitely unusual," Sheena said, clicking off the tape recorder.
The story seemed to have roused her spirits. She sat upright and regarded Tanvir with curiosity. Tanvir bowed her head as if expecting to be chastised.
"Not in a bad way, though," Sheena assured her. "Just different. Right, Nikki?"
"Right," Nikki said, but she was aware of the thickening tension in the room. Arvinda was lost in thought. Gaganjeet had held a tissue to her nose to catch a sneeze that seemed frozen in place from the time Rita and Meera made intimate contact. Bibi nodded slowly and sagely, still processing the story's details. Then she spoke.
"This kind of thing is more common than you think," she said. "Two girls in my village were rumored to serve each other as well, but I believe they just used their hands."
These words unfroze Gaganjeet. There was a sudden flurry of activity in her seat, sneezing, coughing, zipping up a purse and picking up a walking stick.
"I really shouldn't be in class when I'm unwell. My apologies," she told Nikki.
Her knees made a pistol snap sound as she stood up and hurried out of the classroom.
"You scared her," Preetham accused Sanveer. "Why would you write such a story? This isn't a class for women who do perverted things."
Sanveer dropped her head once again. Nikki felt a flash of irritation with Preetham.
"Sanveer has told a story about pleasure," she said. "I don't think it matters who Rita and Meera find that pleasure with." "It's unnatural. It may as well be science fiction," Preetham said. "And those two women have husbands. They're cheating."
She shot a pointed look at her mother.
"Maybe they consider it practice, or something which enhances their bedroom lives," Sheena said. "In the next scene, their husbands return home, and Arita and Meera put on a little performance for their husbands. That's a good night for everyone."
"Why do their husbands have to come home?" Arvinda asked. "Maybe these women are content like this. We don't have to have men in all the stories."
"Intimate relations are to be shared by men and women," Preetham said. "You're encouraging these sorts of stories, as if all of us were dissatisfied with our husbands."
"You're lucky your husband treated you well. Not everybody had that luxury," Arvinda shot back.
"Oh, Mother, please. He provided for you, didn't he? He gave you a roof over your head. He worked. He fathered your children. What more could you want?"
"I would have liked some of what the women in these stories are getting."
"It sounds like you did get it," Preetham muttered, "just not with the man you were married to."
"Don't judge me, Preetham, don't you dare," Arvinda said.
Preetham's eyes widened.
"I don't have any secrets. If you accuse me of anything, you're just lying." "That's right, you don't have any secrets. You have no reason for any secrets. Your marriage was happy. Have you ever stopped to think about why that was?" "Because I let you have choices. I said no to the men who emerged from every corner as soon as you came of age. I didn't care if they said my daughter was pretty and could marry into a well-known family. I wanted you to have your pick."
"Maybe we should stop for a while," Nikki suggested,
but Arvinda shushed her.
"Nikki, don't try to play the peacemaker. Some things need to be said, and they're going to be said now."
Arvinda returned her firm stare to Preetham.
"The adjustment period for some women was horrific. You weren't still a little girl like Dharampal. She was 10. You weren't like me, hastily mismatched with a man a foot shorter than you because both families were trying desperately to consolidate some drought-stricken land before it lost its value. Your father felt so small around me that his stick was limp all the time, and when I dared to complain once that we never had sex, he threatened to throw me out of the house."
The outburst stunned everybody into silence. Nikki's mind raced. Of all the revelations hammering around in her mind, she could only focus on the most horrific.
"Dharampal was 10, she whispered.
The room was so silent, her words seemed to echo across the walls. Arvinda nodded.
"Her parents brought her to a pandit when she was 10. And according to his palm reading, she was destined for nobody else but him. He told them that she would have 5 sons with him, and that they would all be wealthy landowners, who would not only take care of her, but also ensure the prosperity of their grandparents. They were so excited by these prospects that they disregarded his age, 30 years her senior, and got her married to him. They came to England about 10 years later."
"What happened to his predictions then? Dharampal only had daughters," Sheena said.
"I imagine he blamed her for it. They always do." Bitterness laced Arvinda's voice.
"Most of us were about that young, but we weren't sent to sleep with our husbands until we were older," Bibi said. How much older?
Nicky asked. Bibi shrugged. 16, 17, who can remember? The next generation got away with marrying a bit later. Surely your mother was about 18 or 19?
My mother went to university first, Nicky said. She was 22.
Even that seemed an impossibly young age to make such a permanent choice.
University? Arvinda looked impressed. No wonder your parents raised you in proper London. They're modern.
I've never considered my parents modern, Nicky commented.
She considered all the arguments about short skirts, talking to boys, drinking, being too British. Pleasing them had been an endless battle that she was still fighting.
But they were. They knew how to speak English before they came here. We built Southall because we didn't know how to be British.
Better keep to our own kind, or that's the idea at least, Sheena said. My mother was so nervous coming to England. She'd heard stories of Indian kids being beaten up at school. My father arrived here first and convinced her that Southall was a place with our kind of people and we would fit right in.
If you had any problems in this new country, your neighbours would rush to your side and bring you money, food, whatever you need. That's the beauty of being surrounded by your community, Arvinda said. But if you had a problem with your husband, who would help you to leave him?
Nobody wanted to be involved in other families' personal affairs.
You should be grateful, they said if you complained. This country is spoiling you.
She directed a stern look at Preetham.
I gave you all the happiness I couldn't have. You loved your husband, your marriage, good for you. I survived mine.
Once the last woman had trailed out of class, Nicky hurried from the building, a clear plan in her head. The high street was bright and warm with the lights from the shop windows. The pot-bellied owner of Sweetie Sweets beckoned to Nicky from the doorway.
Gulab jamun and barfi all 50% off, he offered.
At the newsagent's next door, a large poster announced the arrival of 3 Bollywood actors whose faces and names Nicky vaguely recognised from Mindy's film collection. Her cheeks burned from the winter chill. Droplets of misty rain clung to her hair. Number 16 Ansell Road was a compact brick structure with a paved driveway, identical to most other houses on this street. A strong wind current carried the scent of cumin through the streets. Nicky knocked on the door. She heard the rapid thumping of steps and then the door cracked open. Through the chain loop, Tarampal's eyes peered out into the world. Nicky saw the recognition, then the flare of anger in her eyes.
Please,
Nicky said. She braced her hands against the door to keep Tarampal from slamming it shut.
I just want to talk to you for a moment.
I have nothing to say to you,
Tarampal said.
You don't have to say anything. I just want to apologize.
Tarampal remained still.
You already said sorry in your note.
So you received the tapes?
The door clicked shut. The hairs on Nicky's arm stood straight against the chilly breeze. It began to drizzle. She took cover under the awning and knocked rapidly on the door.
Can I just talk to you for just a moment?
From the corner of her eye, she noticed Tarampal's figure in the living room window. She went to the window and started knocking on it.
Tarampal, please.
Tarampal flitted out of Nicky's view. Nicky carried on rapping her knuckles against the glass, aware that she was causing a commotion. It worked. The main door flung open and Tarampal stormed out onto the front steps.
What do you think you're doing? The neighbours can see you,
Tarampal hissed. She ushered Nicky into the house and shut the door behind them.
Sarab Singh will tell his wife I've got lunatics visiting my house.
Nicky didn't know who Sarab Singh was or why his wife mattered. She cast a glance down the hallway. This was an immaculate home, with the strong smell of varnish suggesting a recent renovation. She recalled the Lungard Hall ladies mentioning damage to Tarampal's property. Clearly she'd fixed up the place since.
Are your children here, your grandchildren?
I have daughters, all married. They live with their husbands.
I didn't realize you were all alone, Nicky said.
Jagdev found a place near his new job, but he still visits me at weekends.
He was the one who read your note to me.
Who was Jagdev? Nikki had trouble keeping up.
I'm not familiar with a lot of people in this community, she began.
Oh, yes, you're a proper London girl,
Tarampal said.
A look of scorn crossed her face when she said the city's name. In her own home, she had a haughty confidence. She was still wearing a widow's outfit, but an updated version of the white tunic, the neckline bare and the waist cinched to show her figure. The rain was spitting against the windows now.
Could I trouble you for a cup of tea? Nikki asked. It's very cold out there and I've come all this way.
It was a small victory when Tarampal grudgingly said,
Yes.
It would be easier to convince Tarampal to return to the class over tea. Nikki followed Tarampal into the kitchen, where granite counters ran the length of the room beneath a sleek row of cupboards. The electric stove was the state-of-the-art model that Mum coveted, with a white coil seemingly drawn on the surface, the heat filling it instantly in a digital glow. Tarampal had switched it on and was rummaging through her cupboard. She produced a dented stainless steel pot and an old cookie tin that rattled with the sound of seeds and spices. Nikki had to suppress a smile. If Mum had an ultra-modern kitchen, she would probably still store dal in old ice cream containers and use her simple pot for boiling tea leaves as well.
You want sugar? Tarampal asked.
No, thank you.
The kitchen became briefly awash in headlights.
That's probably Sarab Singh leaving for his night shift, Tarampal said as she added the milk. I don't think he likes being home alone. A few years ago, when Kulwinder and Maya went to India for a holiday, he worked double shifts every evening. God knows he needs even more distraction now.
Kulwinder lives there, Nikki said.
She went to the living room and looked through the window. The driveway of the opposite home matched Tarampal's.
Yes, you came to Maya's wedding, Sangeet, didn't you? It was there. I thought they should have rented a hall because there were so many guests, but...
Tarampal threw her hands up, as if to say it wasn't up to her. Nikki had no time to correct the assumption that she had been a wedding guest. Tarampal had returned to the kitchen and was bringing out two cups of steaming tea. Nikki followed her.
Oh, thank you for this, Nikki said, taking her cup. I don't have homemade chai every day.
The chai from the market stall earlier had been too thick and sugary.
You British girls prefer Earl Grey, Tarampal said.
She wrinkled her nose.
Oh, no, Nikki said. I enjoy a cup of chai. I just don't live at home.
The aroma of cloves made her surprisingly nostalgic for the afternoon spent visiting relatives in India. An idea came to her.
Would you be able to write down the recipe for me?
How would I do that? I can't write, Tarampal said.
Maybe we could work on that together, if you came back to classes.
Tarampal set down her teacup.
I don't have anything to learn from you or those widows. It was a mistake signing up in the first place.
Let's talk about it.
No need.
If you're concerned about people finding out about the stories...
At the mention of the stories, Tarampal's nostrils flared.
You think those stories aren't a big deal, but you have no idea what they can do to people's minds.
Stories aren't responsible for corrupting people, Nikki argued. They give people a chance to experience new things.
Experience new things, Tarampal snorted. Don't give me that.
Maya was a big reader as well. I saw her reading a book one day. The cover had a picture of a man kissing a woman's neck outside a castle. On the cover.
I don't think books are a bad influence.
Well, you're wrong.
Thank goodness my daughters weren't like that. We pulled them out of school before they could get any funny ideas.
Tarampal's sternness was frightening.
How old were your daughters when they got married?
Nikki asked.
16, Tarampal said. All were sent to India when they were 12 to learn to cook and sew. The matches were made there, and then they returned here for a few more years of school.
What if they hadn't agreed to the matches? They were so young.
Tarampal gave a dismissive wave.
There's no such thing as disagreeing, only accepting and adjusting. I had to do that when my marriage was arranged, and when my daughter's time came, they knew their duties. This interpretation of marriage sounded like an endless list of chores.
It's rather unexciting, Nicky said.
I would think that girls who grow up in England would want romance and passion.
Aye, Nicky, that just isn't how we did things. We didn't have these choices.
Tarampal sounded almost wistful.
So, when it came time for your daughters to get married, you wanted them to have no choice as well?
Nicky asked, knowing she was on dangerous ground, but not knowing how to tread lightly on this subject. The softness in Tarampal's eyes vanished.
Nowadays, girls run around with 3 or 4 men at the same time, deciding when they want it to happen. You think that's right?
What do you mean? Nicky asked, leaning toward Tarampal. Tarampal looked away.
I didn't say you were like that.
No, what you said, deciding when they want it to happen. When they want what to happen?
Oh, don't make me spell it out, Nicky. Girls here are spoiled by their choices. A man can't just storm into a room and take off a young girl's clothes and tell her to spread her legs. Somebody at the temple told me that there's a law in England against a husband doing it to his wife if she doesn't want to. His own wife. Why does a man get punished for doing this? Because the English don't value marriage like we do.
It's punishable because it's wrong even if they're married. It's rape, Nicky said. It was another one of those words surrounded by such taboo that she had never learned its Punjabi equivalent, so she said it in English. No wonder Tarampal resented the other widows. Although they appeared reserved like her, their storytelling went against everything she'd been trained to believe about marriage.
That's what husbands did back then. We didn't complain. Being married is about growing up.
At the corners of Tarampal's eyes, fine lines were just beginning to emerge. Her hair was still dark and thick, unlike the white buns worn by the other widows. She was young, yet she'd been a wife for 3/4 of her life. This detail struck Nicky hard.
How old were you? She asked. 10,
Tarampal said. Her face shone with a pride that made Nicky's stomach roil.
Weren't you afraid? Weren't your parents afraid? Nothing to be afraid of. It was such good fortune, being destined for Gemmell Singh, the Pandit himself, Tarampal said. Our horoscopes matched, you see, so there was no denying our match, even though there was a huge age difference.
Was there time for you to get to know each other? Nicky said. Before the wedding night, I mean. Tarampal took a longer pause to sip her tea, and in that time Nicky thought she noticed a cloud cross her face.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't press, Nicky said. It's obviously personal. It doesn't happen like that, Tarampal said. It's much simpler, and you will want it to be over with as soon as it starts. The romance, the consideration for each other's needs, that comes later.
So it came then, Nicky said. She wasn't sure why she felt so relieved, but her sentiments were mirrored in Tarampal's features. An unexpected smile twitched on her lips.
Yes,
she said, her cheeks high with colour.
All of the good things came later.
She cleared her throat and turned her head away, clearly embarrassed that Nicky had seen her reminiscing.
What's wrong with writing about them then? Sharing them? Nicky asked gently. Hi, Nicky. Those stories are vulgar. Why must these private things be written for everybody to see? You're defending these stories because you're unmarried. You don't know anything yet. You must be picturing it with somebody. You have a boy in mind, do you?
Me? No. Tarampal would probably chase Nicky out and bleach the seats if she knew that Nicky had been with several men already, none of whom she'd ever considered marrying. Then there was Jason. Last night he had come to the pub, and she'd invited him back to the flat after her shift. The floorboards had creaked dangerously with their shifting steps as they tumbled onto her bed. Afterwards, Nicky had suggested that they spend their next evening in Jason's flat.
My place isn't an option, he'd said. I've got a flatmate who's always there and the thinnest walls in the world.
A catch in his voice suggested this was an excuse. She wasn't dwelling on it. She couldn't. She liked him too much. A moment passed.
Nikki turned towards the window, looking at Kulwinder's home. The curtains were drawn shut, and the porch light was off, giving it the shadowy appearance of a house in mourning. Turning back to face Tarampal, Nikki's gaze landed on an item on the fridge. A Femme Fighters magnet clip.
"Is that yours?"
Nikki asked, surprised, pointing to it.
"No, of course not. It was Maya's," Tarampal said. "She left it here. Kulwinder and Sarap came through and took everything, of course. All of her clothes, her books, her photos. All that was left after they came through were the little things. A paperclip here, a sock there, this magnet as well."
"She lived here?" Tarampal stared at her strangely.
"Yes, she was married to Jagdev. How can you not know this? Weren't you friends with Maya?"
"No."
"Well, how do you know Kulwinder then?"
"I responded to an advertisement for the job."
"I thought you were one of Maya's friends. I thought Kulwinder offered you the job as a favor."
Nikki looked at the magnet again. No wonder Tarampal thought they were friends. They clearly had a few things in common. There was such contempt in Tarampal's voice every time she mentioned Maya, yet they had been practically related.
"So Jagdev is your nephew?"
"He's a family friend from Birmingham, no relation. He came to London to look for work after he got laid off from his job. Kulwinder insisted on introducing him to Maya because she thought they'd be suitable for each other."
Tarampal sighed.
"But she was wrong. Maya was a very unstable girl."
Jagdev, the son Tarampal always wanted. Nikki could see her relishing the role of possessive mother-in-law. She wished there was some way to teleport Mindy into this conversation, to show her what she was getting herself into. Tarampal wasn't even related to Jagdev, and she could hardly hide her disdain. What were Mindy's chances of winning approval with a real mother-in-law?
"So it was set up then. How long did they have to date?"
3 months," Tarampal said.
3 months?
Even Mindy and Mum would balk at that time frame.
"I thought Maya was a modern girl. Why the hurry?"
"The widows didn't tell you all this?"
"No,"
Nikki said. Tarampal sat back and eyed her.
"I find that surprising. All they do is gossip."
"They're not gossips," Nikki said, rushing to the widow's defense. For all her frustration at being excluded from conversations about Maya, Nikki admired Sheena's protectiveness.
"Sheena's especially loyal to her. I suppose these stories get distorted and she wants to prevent that from happening."
"There's only one story," Tarampal said. "Sheena's like Kulwinder. She doesn't want to believe the truth. That's the truth."
She pointed at the back door. A small window in the door provided a view of the garden, but it was dark. Again, Tarampal was assuming Nikki knew this truth. She looked at the Femme Fighters magnet clip. If Maya were alive, maybe she'd be teaching the women's classes and finding some way to sneak in erotic stories under Kulwinder's nose. What was this terrible fate that nobody wanted to discuss? If Nikki wanted to know more, she had to play along.
"Well, I did hear some rumours that Maya was not very honourable," she said. "Maya was seeing an English boy. Did she not tell you that? Huh, she wanted to marry him. Came home with a ring on her finger and everything. Kulwinder put her foot down and told Maya she had a choice. Marry the boy and leave her family forever, or leave the boy and have her family."
"Leave the family," Nikki thought immediately. "Good riddance to old-fashioned parents." Then she was struck by a sobering memory of her first few weeks alone in her flat. It had been lonely enough without giving up her family forever.
"And a forced marriage was part of the deal?" Nikki asked.
"An arranged marriage by the people who had her best interests at heart,"
Tarampal replied flatly.
"We all cared for her, you know. I was a close friend of Kulwinder's, and I had seen Maya grow up. We knew what she needed."
"Were they compatible then?"
Nikki asked. "A good blood type match?" she refrained from asking.
"Sometimes Maya and Jaggi got along, but they fought a lot too. Most of their arguments were in English, but this body language everybody can understand."
Tarampal puffed up her chest and tilted her head upwards,
to challenge an invisible adversary.
One day, she purposely said in Punjabi, we should get our own place. She wanted me to hear it.
Nikki sensed a bit of excitement in Tarampal's reenactment. Auntie Geeta got similarly carried away whenever she arrived at Mum's place with fresh gossip.
She just wants to connect to people, the poor thing, Mum always said in her defence,
though Nikki knew Mum found it unsettling, this eagerness to vilify people for entertainment's sake. Yet Nikki found it just as difficult to suppress her curiosity.
Did they move then? She was very unstable, you know.
It was the second time Tarampal had mentioned this.
The question is, why did she want so much privacy? In our community, girls move in with their in-laws once they're married. Since I was offering very reasonable rent, Jaggi decided to stay here, and this became their marital home. See, Maya didn't want to accept her life. She was trying to live as if she had married that Gora.
She thought she could make it work, Nikki thought sadly.
So they stayed here?
She asked, looking round. Even a contemporary home like this one would feel confining to a woman trapped in an unhappy marriage. I'm guessing Maya wasn't happy about it.
Not at all.
Then Jaggi began confiding in me. He suspected that she was having an affair. Maya put on perfume in the morning before going to work in the city. She stayed late at the office and was driven home by a man from her office.
Who would drive all the way to Sartol just to drop off a girl unless they were getting something in exchange?
A friend, a kind colleague, Nikki said. Tarampal shook her head.
Nonsense!
Her pronouncement was absolute.
Maya and Jaggi had a big quarrel about it. She packed her bags and went home to Kulwinda's place.
Here Tarampal paused and stared out the window. Nikki followed her gaze. The plain curtains in Kulwinda's bay windows were drawn tightly together. What happened when Maya decided to leave? Nikki imagined Kulwinda's lip set in that stern line as she shook her head and ordered Maya to do her duty.
And then what?
Nikki asked.
Maya was home for about a week, and then she was sent back. Things were peaceful at first, but it didn't take long for the fighting to resume once she returned.
Tarampal sighed.
You can't expect the world from your husband. The sooner you girls understand that, the fewer disappointments you'll face.
Mindy's dating profile picture flashed into Nikki's mind, that shimmer of hope in her eyes. Nikki felt a sudden relief on Mindy's behalf. She had far more control over her situation than Maya had. Although Nikki still had her doubts about Mindy meeting the women of the families first, at least she had choices. She could say no, and she certainly wasn't going to be bullied into a 3-month courtship. Mum would never allow it.
My sister's looking for a husband, but she's being selective, Nikki informed Tarampal. She wants to avoid being let down. Good luck to your sister, then, Tarampal said. Let's hope she doesn't end up losing her mind, like Maya.
A silence stretched between them, during which Nikki's eyes scanned every available space in the house to avoid Tarampal's intense stare. The kitchen opened out onto a living room with a plush suede sofa facing a modern stone fireplace. A row of 3 framed wedding portraits lined the wall space above the mantel. Each bejeweled bride wore a large gold hoop on her nostril and a pattern of sequined bindis that studded the arch of her eyebrows. The overwhelming jewellery partially obscured their facial expressions.
How did Maya die?
Nikki asked softly.
She took her own life, Tarampal said. How?
It was a morbid question, but Nikki had to know.
The way women in our culture do it when they are filled with shame,
Tarampal said. She blinked and turned away.
With fire.
Nikki stared at Tarampal in horror.
Fire?
Tarampal nodded at the back door.
There is still a patch of burnt grass in the garden. I don't go out there anymore.
So that was what Tarampal had pointed to earlier. It was too much to take in. The revelation left Nikki slightly short of breath. From the corner of her vision, the back garden was shrouded in shadows, but she adjusted her seat so she could cut it out completely. How could Dharampal stand it? No wonder the house had been so lavishly remodeled, an attempt to move on from the memory of Maya's ghastly suicide. Nikki felt a lump in her throat as she thought of Gulwinda and Sarab living across the street from the site of their daughter's death.
Was anybody else home at the time? She asked. Surely somebody could have stopped her, she thought, with a fierce and desperate longing to save Maya from herself.
I was at the temple. Jaggi was halfway up the road. He had found some messages on Maya's phone from the man she had been sleeping with. He told her he wanted to divorce her. This sent Maya into a panic. She didn't want to be divorced. She was afraid of never being able to face the community or her parents again. Maya was in hysterics and begged him to stay. Jaggi stormed out of the house saying, "This is over." That was when she ran out into the back garden, doused herself in petrol and lit the match.
"Oh my goodness," Nikki said.
She shut her eyes, but the violent scene played out in her mind. Dharampal kept on speaking, but her voice sounded far away.
"That's the problem with having too much imagination, Nikki. Girls begin to desire too much."
This flawed and rigid logic was maddening. Nikki didn't have any idea what Maya looked like, but she pictured a younger, slimmer version of Gulwinda, wearing jeans and her hair in a loose ponytail. A modern girl. The callous words of those Langar Hall ladies returned to her. A girl with no honour. If people in the community were ready to brand her as such, she probably saw no reason to keep living.
"Poor Gulwinda and Sarab," Nikki said.
"Poor Jaggi," Dharampal said. "You should have seen him at the funeral, clutching his hair, falling to the ground, pleading for her to come back, despite everything she did to him. He suffered much more."
Surely grief wasn't a competition.
"I'm sure it was difficult for everyone, including yourself," Nikki said. "It was more difficult for Jaggi," Dharampal insisted. "Think of what Gulwinda and Sarab have been saying about him. That he drove Maya to it, that he never took care of her. Why should his reputation suffer?"
Discomfort swelled in Nikki's stomach. Where exactly had the conversation taken this turn? Less than an hour ago, she had rushed across the Broadway, thinking that she might convince Dharampal to return to the classes, but she was more willful than Nikki had expected.
"You have a lovely home," she said quickly,
before Dharampal's rant could spiral any further into this dark territory of honour.
"Thank you," Dharampal said. "My mum wants to do some remodelling," Nikki said. "Do you have the contact information of your guy?"
"Mum would like that. A Punjabi contractor. Someone who would understand her need to make the house look luxurious for Mindy's future wedding." Dharampal nodded and left the kitchen. It was a relief to be left alone. Nikki took in a deep breath and finished her tea, gulping down even the gritty remnants of seeds and leaves that had escaped through the sieve. The house was silent, except for the chorus of rain outside. She plucked the femme fighter's magnet from the fridge and rolled it in her palm. To think that she had handed out hundreds of these at a Hyde Park rally, and that somewhere in that pulsing summer crowd, Maya might have been present. Dharampal returned with a brochure for a contractor. Attached at the top was a name card with the contractor's name in gilded raised lettering. Rick Petten, Home Renovations.
"He's English," Nikki said with surprise. "I had Jaggi to help me with communicating," Dharampal said. "He's back in Birmingham, but he visits every so often."
"Like a good son," Nikki said. Dharampal flinched.
"He's not my son," she said.
"Of course," Nikki said. What a punishing existence it must have been for Dharampal, with her failure to produce a son for the community's spiritual leader. She was sorry that she'd mentioned it. A look of unease lingered on Dharampal's face as Nikki picked up her satchel. Passing the living room on her way out, Nikki could feel the stares of Dharampal's daughters from their portraits on the wall. Their eyes glistened with youth. It was difficult to discern their emotions beneath the heavy coat of makeup and wedding jewellery. Was it excitement, Nicky wondered, or fear? Chapter 9. Nicky stretched her leg and pinched the edge of the curtains between her toes to drag them across the window. Jason stirred at her side.
Oh, I'll leave them open, he mumbled.
Such an exhibitionist, Nicky teased. I'm just trying to keep the sunlight out. It was late morning. Last night, all night, they'd been up reading stories to each other, with pauses in between to reenact the best scenes. Jason gave her a light smack on the bum.
Naughty, he said.
He reached over her and drew the curtains shut. Dropping his head back onto the pillow, he landed a wet, delicious kiss on Nicky's ear. She sank back into his chest and pulled the covers over both their heads. Jason shifted and rolled to his side. There was a rustling sound. He returned with a slightly crumpled sheet of paper.
Centuries ago, on the fringes of a palace city, there was a talented but modest tailor, Jason narrated.
We already did the tailor one.
I'm writing the sequel, Jason said.
He slipped his hands under the sheets and ran them down the length of her back. Nicky shivered. Jason brushed his lips against her neck, travelling up and down its length with light, dusty kisses. He reached between her legs and began tracing his fingers in circles along her inner thighs, inching upwards and then drawing away. Nicky sank back into the softness of her bed. Charred flesh. The image flashed into her mind so suddenly that Nicky sat up. Startled, Jason jolted away. What happened? He asked. His face was so full of concern that Nicky felt foolish. Nothing, she said.
I must have had a bad dream last night and it came back to me.
Fragments of this dream remained in her consciousness. She could catch a faint whiff of burning and the wide open mouth of an anguished scream. She shook her head. 3 times since her visit to Tarampal, she had dreamt of Maya. Jason placed a light kiss on her collarbone and rolled back to his side, keeping an arm wrapped around his waist.
Do you want to talk about it?
Nicky shook her head. It had been a week since her visit with Tarampal and she'd tried to forget it. She succeeded only partially. Snatches of conversation no longer drifted in her mind, but certain images shot into her view without warning.
Was it a nightmare or a bad dream? Jason asked.
What's the difference?
A nightmare is scary. A bad dream can be a little bad.
Nicky turned to see a smile playing on Jason's lips.
Like the story of a woman who, despite her best efforts to keep her house under control, can't seem to find time to enjoy her husband.
Nicky recognized the beginning of a widow's story. Jason continued.
She decides to go ahead and hire a maid without her husband knowing. The maid enters the house after her husband has gone to work and leaves before he comes home. Now the woman is free to do whatever she wants during the day because she has no more obligations. No school pickups, no grocery shopping. She spends her whole day at the spa and exploring all those sights of London she's never had a chance to see. The plan is working out well, Nicky said, until the husband returns to the house one day because he's forgotten some papers. He sees the maid dusting the tops of the cabinets. Who are you? He asks.
She spins around and sees a tall man advancing towards her, Jason said.
Please don't be angry, the maid says. She explains the wife's plan. She just wants some time to herself. I'm helping her. The man doesn't know how to react. He stares at the maid, wondering how long this has been going on. The maid can't help but notice that he's very attractive. I can do everything your wife can do, she says softly, walking towards him. I've ironed all of these shirts. She touches his collar. I've bought a new set of shaving razors. She strokes his cheek and feels a light prickle of stubble. What else does she do?
The maid doesn't wait for him to answer. She unzips his pants and out springs his man hammer, Jason said. Nicky burst out laughing.
Is that what you call it?
It's quite the tool, You're quite the tool, Nicky said, giving Jason a shove. I walked into that one. All right, his instrument. That implies something clinical, Nicky said, like a surgical instrument. Or something that makes sweet, sweet music, Jason offered. Try a vegetable. Out springs his parsnip. Think of a more consistent shape. You're very bossy about this vocabulary. I want to get it right. All right, his zucchini. They're called courgettes here. Oh, I like that. It sounds sophisticated now. Like a corvette, Jason said. His courgette feels silky to her touch, Nicky continues. Jason frowned. Well, the last time I cooked using courgettes, they were rough and bumpy before being peeled. Surely you've encountered a smooth courgette. Nope. Where do you shop? You've lost me. How about now? Nicky asked. She threw her leg over Jason's side and straddled him. Now I've completely forgotten everything I ever knew, Jason said, staring at Nicky's bare breasts. They have sex in every room of the house. The man feels terrible afterwards and confides in his wife. To his surprise, she looks pleased. I thought that might happen, she says. Turns out she had hidden the husband's papers so he'd have to come home and look for them. She planned for the maids and her husband to meet. Now she wants to watch them while they have sex. It turns her on. Where can I find a girl like that? Jason joked. Close your eyes, Nicky ordered. She lowered her face towards his and kissed him, breathing in the musty smell of his hair. She's watching us now, she murmured into his ear. Are we turning her on? Jason looked up. Yeah. A ring trilled through the flat, sending a jolt through both of them. Jason's smile suddenly vanished as he reached past Nicky for his phone, which was in his jeans pocket under the bed. Sorry, he mumbled, looking at the screen. I have to answer this. He stepped into his pants and pulled them up. It could be work, Nicky thought, but it was Sunday, and Jason's face looked grimmer than somebody being chased by a demanding boss. This had happened twice already. A sudden phone call and then Jason was out so quickly she could practically see the dust he kicked up as he exited the room. Who is that? She asked last time. She didn't want to seem nosy, but the call had interrupted another dinner date when he insisted on leaving his phone on the table. He'd left the restaurant for 20 minutes. Oh, just some work stuff I have to take care of, Jason had said. Nicky strained to listen now, but Jason's voice was muffled and hushed. He was in the bathroom. She tiptoed into the corridor to listen, but her floorboard creaked, betraying her presence. She hurried into the kitchen and busied herself making breakfast for the two of them. Oh, I'm out of coffee, Nicky said, when Jason emerged from his hiding place. He looked tired. She tried not to notice. He sat down at the table and put his head in his hands. Nicky pulled out a chair next to him and squeezed his shoulder. Who was it? Just work, he said. Nicky watched him hastily putting his clothes on, his face cloudy and lost in thought. I was going to make us omelettes, Nicky said, opening the fridge. Do you want 2 eggs again or just one? That's fine, Jason said. 2 eggs it is, Nicky said. Jason looked up. Oh, hey, sorry, he smiled. Just 1 egg would be great, thank you. Nicky nodded and turned to the stove. So I was thinking we should try to catch that French film. I'd still like to see it. Good idea, Jason said. Is it still playing? That cinema runs the same films for ages, Nicky said. I think that weekend was its first showing. They screened a documentary about slums in Calcutta there a couple of years ago. My parents went to see it 3 times over 6 months. Thank goodness for people who like re-watching movies then. They're keeping that cinema going. My parents had very different tastes, though. Dad liked his historical or current affairs shows, and Mum only watched Indian dramas or Hollywood rom-coms. They found something that they could both enjoy in this film. She smiled at the memory of Mum and Dad coming home from another matinee of the same film, their cheeks shining like new lovers. Sounds like they've made the whole arranged marriage thing really work, Jason commented. They did, Nikki said, and she was surprised at this realization. Her eyes became hot with tears.
Now, do you want cheese in your omelette?
Sure, Jason said. His phone rang again. Nikki turned round to see him frowning at the screen. I need to take this again, Nikki. I'm sorry. He hurried out of the flat. Nikki fought the urge to tiptoe to the doorway to eavesdrop on his conversation. She could hear him pacing the cramped corridor outside. When he returned, he attempted another reassuring smile, but it fell flat.
What's going on?
Nikki asked. It's just a work thing, Jason said. Kind of hard to explain. Things are going to be busy for a while. Nikki served the eggs and they both ate in silence. Something had descended heavily on the flat. Had Jason sensed her attempt to keep him around for breakfast so she could ask, casually of course, where their relationship was going? Perhaps it was too soon, but they'd been seeing each other nearly every night since that first date. Intense beginnings were exciting, but they fizzled out quickly, and Nikki wanted more than a fling. Jason finished his breakfast and then left with another round of apologies and promises to call Nikki later. He has a demanding job. He has to leave for an important work thing, Nikki told herself, testing out the line for veracity. It wasn't convincing. Nikki descended into O'Reilly's that evening to find a young woman she'd never seen before standing at the bar. Her brown hair was pulled back in a ponytail, and her makeup was so heavy that her eyes looked drawn on. She gave Nikki a quick smile and then returned to twisting the end of her ponytail in her finger.
Hello,
Nikki said. I'm Joe, the girl said, with no other explanation. Sam emerged from the back room.
Oh, good. Nikki, you've met Joe. Joe, this is Nikki. I'm training Joe to work at the bar, so I'll need you in the kitchen this evening.
All right, Nikki said. If she'd known of this arrangement in advance, she would have prepared herself to spend the evening with those two buffoons in the kitchen. But it seemed that nothing was working out her way today. Heading for the kitchen, she tossed a glance at Joe. She was an attractive young woman, and the snickering Russians were sure to comment again on Sam's dodgy hiring judgment. Joe looked disinterested in anything Sam was saying as he leaned close to her. Come on, Sam, Nikki thought. She wished Olive were here, but she had declared a strike against dismal weather and was in Lisbon for the weekend, courtesy of a last-minute online deal. She pulled out her phone and sent her a quick text. London sucks at the moment. Come back. The reply was a photo of a pristine and sunny beach landscape. Nikki wrote back, stop rubbing it in my face. I'd like to rub this in my face, ha 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 ha. A moment later, a picture appeared on Nikki's phone. It was a shirtless, tanned man on the beach, with such defined stomach muscles they looked hand-drawn. His arm was around Olive's bare waist, and her cheek was pressed against his chest. One of her eyes was squeezed shut in a wink.
Bring me one, Nikki wrote back.
The kitchen was a flurry of activity and foreign language when Nikki entered it. The Russians called out to each other, and Sanja flitted between them. The moment they noticed Nikki, their voices dropped. They shared a smirk. Nikki could tell from a slight tension of recognition in Sanja's face that she had heard and understood their joke. Outside the kitchen, the pub rocked with applause and laughter. It was another trivia event, and the quizmaster was warming up the crowd with a bit of stand-up comedy. Gary appeared at Nikki's side.
You didn't hear me, he asked. I said, take these to table 5.
Sorry, Nikki said.
You have to listen, he said. This is kitchen, not Sam's office.
He made a wiggling motion with his hips. Look, Gary, I think it's really inappropriate of you to imply. Gary walked off before Nikki could complete her sentence. She took the order out, her cheeks burning with indignation. She passed Joe, who was busy checking her phone.
I think you've got customers,
Nikki said. Joe scowled back. On her return back, she saw Sanja at the door.
Don't bother with them, she said. They're arseholes. They want to work at the bar because they think they'll impress girls that way. I don't think working at the bar will help them in that department. Me, I prefer the kitchen work, but maybe I'm better than the new girl.
anyone's better than that, Nikki said. I don't know what Sam's thinking. Noticing the line of cleavage that Joe exposed as she leaned towards a customer, Nikki thought, well, maybe I do. Nikki